This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.MuslimCentral.com/donate.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله الذي أنزل على عبده الكتاب ولم يجعل له عوجا رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي فالحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين ثم ما بعد السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته everyone. Today إن شاء الله I hope to for myself and for all of you to get to know a little bit about Surah Al-Kahf, the 18th Surah of the Quran. I'll start with a famous narration about it. عن أبي الدرداء أن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم قال من حفظ عشر آيات من أول سورة الكهف عصم من الدجال. Narrated Abu Darda, the Prophet ﷺ said, whoever memorized 10 ayat from the beginning of Surah Al-Kahf has been protected from the fitna, from the trial, or from the Dajjal himself, from the false Messiah himself. عن أبي سعيد الخدري رضي الله تعالى عنه أن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم قال من قرأ سورة الكهف في يوم الجمعة أضاء له من النور ما بين الجمعتين. And Abu Sa'id al-Khudri says, whoever recited Surah al-Kahf on the day of Friday, it lights up for him, it creates a light for him that lasts from one Friday to the next, ما بين الجمعتين, what lasts between the two Fridays. This surah is, of course, meant to protect us from one of the greatest trials that is going to afflict humanity that the Prophet ﷺ himself warned about. The surah itself alludes to that great trial as ba'san shadidan min ladunhu, a terrible war that is coming of divine proportions, min ladunhu, and to congratulate believers that their good deeds are not going to be put to waste. It is a profound surah, very uniquely organized. I'll tell you a little bit about that. Most commonly, it is known that the surah is divided into four stories. It's a little bit more complicated than that. It's actually four passages and four stories. And so the way I'd like you to think about, just kind of organize the subject matter of the surah for yourself, is that you can think of it in two halves. Okay, so the first half of the surah is a passage, which is kind of like a sermon from Allah, teaching us about the temporary nature of this life, followed by the first story, followed by another sermon, followed by another story. So there are two elements in the surah, sermons and stories. Sermon means a collection of ayat that are teaching you about a profound reality, like the temporary nature of this world, or what judgment day is going to look like, or what kinds of people are going to be success and what kinds of people are going to be failures. These are all sermons. And then there are stories like the people of the cave, the gardeners. There's the story about Musa alayhi salam's journeys, or Dhulqarnayn. These are stories. But the way that it's organized, like I said, two halves. In the first half, you get sermon, followed by story, followed by sermon, followed by story. So what sermon do you get? The nature of materialism and how we're not supposed to get locked up into the beauty of this world. إِنَّ جَعَلْنَا مَا عَلَى الْأَرْضِ زِينَةً لَهَا لِنَبْلُوَهُمْ أَيُّهُمْ أَحْسَنُ عَمَلًا وَإِنَّا لَجَاعِلُنَا مَا عَلَيْهَا صَعِيدًا جُرُوزًا. We've taken everything in this world and just made it into beautification so that we can test them who is better in terms of deed. So that's the first sermon, followed immediately by the profound story of young people who survived throughout the most difficult trials and held on to their faith. All they knew was that there is one God and only He should be worshipped. And Allah miraculously aided them throughout the ages, allowing them to sleep for several years, several hundred years even, in the midst of a cave when nobody else knew, and then He woke them up. The story is very famous. So that's your first sermon and your first story. The thing I want to share with you about this first half is that the sermons are related to each other. Inshallah, in a more detailed discussion, you'll see my lectures on Surah Al-Kahf. There you'll see that the first sermon and the second sermon are actually, they complete each other, and the stories complete each other. So this is the first story, the story of the people of the cave. The second story is going to be about two gardeners. One of them has a lot of wealth. He's got a great deal of gardens and rivers flowing in between. He's got multiple properties, two gardens actually, and they produce at 100% capacity. You know, وَلَا تَظْلِمْ مِنْهُ شَيْئًا, not a thing is left, like not a grape falls out of place kind of thing. And the other guy is so insignificant in his assets, his neighbor, that his assets aren't even mentioned in the Quran. Right, and one of them kind of talks down to the other one, and Allah teaches him a lesson by removing all of his assets, and his entire garden is just flipped upside down. Now, what's amazing about these two stories, I told you there's the story of the cave and the story of the gardeners, is on the one hand, you underestimate what young people with no material resources are capable of. And so you think, you know, materialism isn't just loving money and loving wealth and loving status. Materialism is the idea that you only believe in material resources as capable of providing aid. Like the only thing that at your disposal is actual physically seen material resources. Allah shatters that on the one hand by us underestimating what young people can be capable of. If they're going to hide out in a cave, how long are they going to survive? They're going to starve to death or come back and get caught. Those are their only two options. And yet Allah defies material science, bends the laws of nature for these young men and saves them, right? So we shouldn't underestimate what Allah can do and how the material world itself is in submission to Allah. On the other hand, is not underestimating, it's overestimating. The wealthy gardener overestimates the value of what he has. لَن تَبِيدَ هَذِهِ أَبَدًا. This is never going to go away. Don't overestimate the value of material good. Allah can take it away at any time. So if you have nothing, don't think you have nothing, you still have Allah. And if you have everything, don't think you have everything. Allah can take all of that away so you understand that you never had anything to begin with. إِنَّ لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّ إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ. So that's how these two stories and the two passages are actually connected to each other. And that's how they're organized. Passage, story, passage, story. In the second half of the surah, it's a different kind of organization. What you get is passage, story one, story two, and then passage. It's like P, S, S, P. It's like a symmetry kind of organization. And here in the beginning, that the first passage and this last passage in the second half of the surah are both dedicated to the Day of Judgment. They're both about resurrection. They're both about what truths are going to manifest on that day. And they're both very powerful, profound passages with multiple links to each other. If you study those carefully, you'll see that they're very closely linked to each other. And what you get in the middle are two more stories. Those are the stories of Musa alayhi salam and Khidr, when he goes on a journey to learn, and he makes three stops. And then you get a story of Dhulqarnain, who goes around the world, and he also makes three stops. So there are parallels between the story of Musa and the story of Khidr also. They also, you know, they both traverse, and they both travel, and they both solve problems or try to solve problems. Here, there's another contrast. In the first two stories, the contrast was overestimating or underestimating in the case of the youth and overestimating in the case of the gardener. Here Allah teaches us something else. He teaches us about a man, Musa alayhi salam, who wants to establish. He's all about justice. And so is Dhulqarnain. They want to do the right thing. Both of these people, they want to do the right thing. But one of them is completely powerless to change the situation around him. He cannot do the right thing because he's been instructed. You cannot say a word. You cannot criticize. So when the ship is being wrecked, you know, or damaged, or when a boy is killed right in front of your eyes, or you had to do hard work and put a wall up and you're not compensated for it, you cannot say a word. That's clear injustice. On the other hand, you have Dhulqarnain, who sees injustice and fixes it. He solves problems wherever he goes. People come to him with a problem and he solves it. What Allah is contrasting here is sometimes you have the power to do things materially and sometimes you don't. Sometimes there's a larger play at work, there's a larger plan at work, and believers have to understand that sometimes they will have material resources at their disposal, and other times they will not have material resources at their disposal to be able to do the right thing, to be able to execute justice, and there's always, we're going to be caught in between, you know, either of these two situations. And in doing so, in summing all of these stories up, what Allah has given us in this amazing surah is really our approach to worldly life. You know, it's having power is not a blessing. Not having it is not a blessing. When you have it, use it the right way. When you don't have it, understand that, you know, that you still have much to do. You still have much to learn. And there's a reason why you don't have it. When you have no resources, there may be a grand plan like the youth. Allah will aid you anyway. And when you have a lot of material resources, money, media, power, reputation, etc., etc., none of that means anything. Allah can take that away whenever He wants. So our reliance at the end of the surah falls entirely on Allah. The idea of Dajjal, let's wrap it up with this. The idea of Dajjal is actually someone who produces materially, physically, worldly, incredible things. He can make crop grow where no crop grows. He can travel at paces nobody can travel. He can bring a dead person back to life and make it look like he's brought a dead person back to life. He's doing these amazing worldly materialistic things and people are mesmerized by it and fall into worship of him. The believers are told, this surah will keep you in check because after this surah, you are not mesmerized by what you see. You understand that there's a reality that you see and there's a much more powerful reality that you and I don't see and don't perceive. And that is the power of Allah Azza wa Jalla that's always at play. that we shouldn't rely on what we see, we should rely on the one who we cannot see, Allah Azza wa Jal. With that, I conclude an overview of this profound and beautiful surah. Try and recite it every Friday. It's very, very good for you. Once again, I've said it in a previous session, recitation of a surah is great. The intention, the intended advice from the Prophet ﷺ is actually to recite with pondering, with reflection. May Allah make us a people of reflection on His Qur'an. Barakallahu li wa lakum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.